I'm Gab. He's Jules. Gray skies over West London. Very much so down the road at Stamford Bridge. But we're going to focus on something else today, Jules, because we have a full show. We have Arsenal falling at Old Trafford against the mighty Manchester United. Mighty, 3 wins in a row. And of course, but there's one place to start. I'm going to start with the derby della Madonnina. I thought this was, in terms of entertainment, in terms of individual quality, amazing. If you can overlook some of the defensive errors,
yeah.
I thought this was a cracking game and another big comeback win for Milan.
I thought it was awesome. I have to be honest. It was the first really big blockbuster match that we had, you know, through Europe. We didn't really have yet a big clash in England, although maybe the Chelsea Spurs, but not to this magnitude. But
Liverpool, you know, this, Man United now.
The Liverpool, yeah. Man United, I guess, was a big one. Yeah. But that was Monday night. It felt a bit different. I don't know. Yeah. This one felt a bit like Saturday, where all the big teams were playing because it's Champions League week. We're like, okay, let's sit and watch. And it didn't disappoint. I thought it was amazing from start to finish. I really wish that Inter had managed up after they were 1-0 up, managed the game a little bit better. Not the Hakan Çalhanoğlu crazy pass that then led to the first Leao goal, to see what would have happened. And Milan been a bit under more pressure because they didn't come back so quickly. But I thought it was an incredible match.
Yeah, it was. I thought it was a tremendous game. I thought, you know, we can focus on the defensive mistakes, and obviously there were defensive mistakes. But I think also we have to get around to the idea that there's kind of a new mindset in Serie A, and has been for some time, which is everywhere except for with Max Allegri in Turin, which is we'll make allowances for some of those errors. Because we want to be front foot, because we want to create more shots. The way Inter set up in this game, I actually thought, you know, the logical thing would have, with no Romelu Lukaku, logical thing would have been put Dzeko in there, you know, long balls to him, let him lay it off for Lautaro. In some ways, that would have made sense. Instead, he went for Correa, effectively. Yeah. Correa and Çalhanoğlu behind Lautaro. He did this because he wanted to dominate the game. Mm. He wasn't able to dominate possession in the game, and that's a credit to Milan. I know you love your individual quality, and I know we're going to get to Rafael Leao, but I want to mention Mike Maignan, because in the end, you know, while Milan are celebrating, blah, 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 Mike Maignan came up huge again in this game.
Yeah, again, 3 days after saving a pen, obviously, and Sassuolo, and getting a point in a way. He did it again, where I thought it was outstanding, especially in the last 20 minutes where Milan were really under pressure, where Inter, after Dzeko came on, and they came back to 3-2, they easily could have scored a third, and who knows what happened at 3-3 with 10 or 15 minutes to go. But he was outstanding. I don't think I've ever seen him that strong. He's in the best form of his life, and that's a credit to him, but also all the work that he did and the level that he reached since joining Milan.
Let's talk about Rafael Leao, because clearly in terms of eye candy, highlight reel, this guy was absolutely special.
Special, 2 goals, 1 assist. I mean, the second goal, we were saying it before the show, for me, is George Weah-esque. The way he does that little hook with the inside of his right foot to go onto his left and then start accelerating to finish the way he did, looks so much like what George Weah used to do when he was playing. They have got so many similarities, and I still don't know if coming off the left is his best position, or if you put him as a centre forward, which we've seen him playing sometimes, it's better for him, and he's still so young that he will have time, and managers will have time to figure it out. But he's so good.
The knock on him is that people say, oh, he doesn't score enough to be centre forward. Well, yeah, he doesn't play centre forward.
Exactly, let's see.
So
yeah.
He sees less of the ball. I'm so curious to see what our boy Fernando Santos does at the World Cup. Does he find room for him with Portugal?
Yeah.
A word on Milan as well, because Tomori and Kalulu have been such a big part of Milan's success defensively. They were at fault in the first goal. We say they were at fault. I think the real fault is the Ketelaere who doesn't track Braza's run. But they've really taken Milan to another level. And again, I can't talk about how in Italy we have all these preconceptions. Oh no, young defenders are too young. Foreign defenders, blah, blah, blah. These two guys come in and they show that they can easily handle it.
Yeah, amazing. I was a bit disappointed by the second goal. I think Tomori is half a second late on Dzeko, where you could clearly see the move towards the near post that Tomori should have followed even quicker. And I think then he could block the shot from Dzeko. Instead, he just deflects it kind of thing. But I think they were amazing, and I'm just in love with Kalulu. We said it before. I think, I don't know if Deschamps will call him in the next international break in September, and then for the World Cup, or if that might come too early because of the competition in his position. But sooner rather than later, he'll be in the national team.
We'll get to Inter, some of their issues in a second, but I wanted to touch upon, I want to continue with Al first, because obviously he was at Lille, he was part of the Lille conveyor belt. He got a lot of hype. I have to say, like, I remember going to watch a game at Paris Saint-Germain against Lille a couple of years ago when he was still there. And and it was, all the hype was about Pepe, not Leao. And, you know, I was like, eh, I don't see it. Of course, I was entirely wrong. Did he get that much hype when he was there?
Luis Campos always said when he brought him in from Sporting that he's the Portuguese Mbappe. This is the similar players.
Way not to put pressure on somebody.
I know. Like, hey, you know.
Well, you compared him to George Weah, so, you know.
Yeah, true. But now it's a bit... Now the comparison, whoever you want to compare him with or who he reminds you of, or for me, George Weah, but for you, it could be someone else, is different than when he was 18 or 17 when he arrived, you know. And obviously, they got him on a free, which is still not really resolved. All that issue about should Lille have paid Sporting, etc. But it was pretty clear that he had, in terms of athleticism and the technical ability, all of that, everything to clearly be a very good player. The rest was like, okay, how strong mentally is he to make the step up with the discipline on the pitch, off the pitch, and, you know, work hard and everything? Because we've seen also those talents before, just relying a little bit on the talent and not enough maybe on the hard work kind of thing. But, and the move to Milan, I remember a few people saying, is this move a bit dodgy because Milan paying 30 million for him after one season in France where he hasn't really, like you said, like you saw, we all saw it where, okay, we see the talent, but it doesn't really materialize in anything yet. And I just think Pioli deserves so much credit and his team for taking Leao, which was really like an unpolished diamond, to Milan and say, okay, this is how we're going to work. This is what we're going to make you do. And I think this is where you see the quality of a manager. We can say everything about, okay, win trophies and be successful of that. But maybe the best quality of a manager is to make those take a player like Leao and take it to the next level, making him improve. And I think Pioli has done that so, so well. I mean, the player he is now compared to where he was in France is unrecognizable almost.
So he's entering the last 2 years of his contract. So you're going to have to renew his deal. Yeah. And this is probably part of the reason why he was linked to Chelsea, if you remember, late in the window. Some enormous amount of money. I don't know how real it was. Again, I would hope that if Chelsea work out that they need Leao, they would start getting the ball rolling sooner. You know, this isn't Aubameyang, who's been on sale all summer, who they ended up with, where you could just knock on the door on the last day. Here, you want Leao, you need to get the ball rolling sooner. But, you know, they were talking 100 million, north of 100 million there. The thing with him is, if he gets a new deal, it's going to push at the top of what Milan's salary limits have been.
Yeah, that's the thing.
What do you do now? Thus far, right?
Yeah.
So there is a sense that Milan might be willing to do business next summer if they can't extend that deal.
But would they want to extend his deal?
Well, it's interesting because, of course, Milan have new owners now. Obviously, Redbird's taken over. Jerry Cardinale, he was at his first game. He was so happy. For me, this is different. This is different, too, from the Gigio Donnarumma deal. Obviously, because the reason I bring this up with Milan, they've done this before, right? Frank Kessie, Gigio Donnarumma, the two, and Çalhanoğlu.
Yeah.
Three cases where Milan said, now, we think you're worth this. If you don't like it, you know, hit the road, right? I think if they went back, would they change their minds over those three things? I would argue they've certainly on Donnarumma, I think the answer would be no, because if they had kept Donnarumma at those figures, obviously not Mino, but Mino's people, you know, his agents would then be talking about, oh, well, time to extend again. And they got Mike Maignan, who's phenomenal. I mean, I'm not going to say he's better than Donnarumma, but some people certainly would say that.
Yeah.
Or you know, they're comparable. Kessie, we'll see how it turns out. Çalhanoğlu, you can say, oh, but, you know, Inter, he moved to Inter and was a success at Inter. Yeah, maybe, but in the end, Milan won the title without Çalhanoğlu.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a strong pressure to keep that line. I think they have to get their sums right. and not be afraid to take a hard line on this and say, all right, we're going to pay this much. But complicating the whole thing, as you know, and we've spoken about this before, Rafael Leao, for some crazy reason, personally, well, I'll get to the reason, personally owes something like, was it 16, 19
yeah,
million euros?
Yeah, 20, let's say 20.
20
yeah.
million to Sporting Lisbon. And this is because, this is, what, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, something like
yeah.
that? There was an issue at Sporting Lisbon where a bunch of fans came into the club's training ground, confronted the players, beat up the players, a whole bunch of players.
Yeah.
And the players used that as an opportunity to become free agents,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Which they're allowed to do.
A lot of like Rui Patricio, a lot of them did.
Many,
yeah.
Bastos.
Yeah.
And so then they ended up, so he ended up moving to Lille on a free. Now Sporting Lisbon says, well, we need compensation for this because he's worth X amount of money. It's fair enough, perhaps.
Yeah.
But the question is, who pays that compensation?
Yeah.
Right now, it's on Leao personally. I'm pretty sure Leao does not have 20 million euros. not yet, anyway. So you have to monitor that and accept that at some point down the road,
yeah.
Milan and Lille
yeah.
will probably have to compensate Sporting.
Yeah, well, you think so. Although... Lille, the point that Lille are making right now is like, hang on, how come he's been allowed to be registered for us then when we got him on a free so that we, you know, we send his registration that was accepted by FIFA, UEFA, the French League, anybody well, you want. And no one said, well, let's well, wait until we resolve the problem with Sporting.
Because there's due process, right?
Yeah.
So they don't want to penalize a player. So they say, all right, player, you can play. We've made this ruling, but obviously there's appeals. There is a due legal process that continues. The alternative would be like, Rafael Leao, you can't play for 3 years until we resolve this issue.
True.
Which wouldn't have been good for anybody.
But Lille also said we were allowed to get him on a free. Otherwise, you know, so that's what they're going to build towards. But I think, and I think Lille knew exactly that there was a risk or a danger that this would come up. And I think rightly so. So, and same with Milan when they bought him for 30, would have known that there was this hanging around that at some point
would
come
they
back.
Knew. So of course they knew.
If in the end Sporting get 10 million and Lille pay 5 and Milan pay 5, or maybe Lille, in a way Lille should pay all really because it's got nothing to do with Milan. Milan paid 30 million for him to Lille. It's Lille who got him on a free where really he was not a free transfer.
These things end up... We saw there was a similar case with Adrian Mutu years ago.
True.
These things end up resolving themselves in the players' favor. But of course, you know, Sporting, I think, also have a point.
Yeah,
I think some agents really took advantage of that of that situation. A word on Inter, that defense, which was so rock solid in the past, really had a rough ride in this game. Do you blame the defense? Do you blame the midfield?
I think it's a good debate. I blame a bit of both. And I also blame Inzaghi in a way, but not in a bad way. I like the fact that they're more expensive than under Conte and they were so solid defensively Conte because they played 20 yards deeper than they do now. So obviously you expose your defense a bit more. But I on Saturday, I didn't think the Bastoni, Skriniar, De Vrij trio looked very solid and the serenity was there. They made mistakes, the positioning, when they know each other so well, felt a bit like, what's going on here? And again, the way Leao scored the second, I mean, even the Giroud goal, I'm like...
The Giroud goal, they all seem to freeze.
Yeah.
I think, though, that's because they don't expect that pass from Leao.
Yeah, true.
I mean, that just totally... And also the finish still, from Giroud, if you look at it, it's not a clean... It doesn't.
It's not. He hits his standing leg.
But he hits it. He still manages to get all this power off it, which is weird. It's not, you know, and I think that kind of that befuddled them a little bit.
But I do wonder if Skriniar, with the move to PSG that didn't happen, that he wanted it to happen. I mean, he's out of contract in next summer. Maybe he's playing a little bit on his mind. I don't think they've only kept one. I think there's only one game they don't concede so far this season in
they're
five.
Also, if I were unkind, I'd say they're also playing in front of Handanovic, but that's a whole other issue. I want to wrap this by saying Inter have added a body at the back. They brought in Acerbi. This story with Acerbi, it's such a weird story. It's a weirdly Italian story, but I think it's a tremendous story. Acerbi, of course, Italian international defender. He's now 33, but you know he can do a job for you.
Experience.
He's very active on social media, involved in a whole bunch of social causes. Some people say that part of that is part of the reason why the Lazio fans never quite or ultimately turned on him, that he was a little bit too social justice oriented. I think that might be unkind. The Inter fans don't like him because, oh, by the way, he's also a man who's beaten cancer as well. We should point out. Inter fans, a lot of the ultras don't want him, partly because Inter's ultras or some of the ultras groups are twinned with Lazio ultras. But they also don't like him because he's not just a former Milan player, but he's a self-described Milan fan. And when Lazio played Milan last year in the game that ultimately gave Milan the title, you see him smiling after Lazio concede. I think this is totally unfair on him. I think he's a good signing to add depth to. You know, a back line where you get beyond that three.
You've got Di Marco, you know, and that's it.
Danilo D'Ambrosio, but he's a different profile defender. Di Marco, perhaps more of a wing back. We saw the impact he had when he came on.
Yeah.
One of the arguments against Inzaghi is he should have made those changes sooner, perhaps.
Yeah, or not even start Damian.
Yeah, or be more aggressive with Di Marco. So I'm on team Acerbi. I will come out and say
that's good. I like that.
I think at his age, I want to see him go another go. And I think he deserves another shot. But it shows you the power of the fans.
Yeah, of course.
Lazio were ready to let him go on a free. He basically spent like 3 weeks in Milan as the transfer window counted down. They weren't negotiating. They had a deal in place. But it was just because Stephen Jang, the Inter president, hesitated on giving the green light. And I think, in part, because of the reaction from fans.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules.
After five straight wins to start the season, Arsenal no longer perfect.
Nope.
I thought this was a game that they could have won. I thought it was a game they should have won. Instead, they go to Old Trafford and they lose 3-1 to Manchester United. Jules, I think I'm neutral here. I thought they played well.
They played really well.
And I thought that it was individual mistakes.
Yeah.
And I think if you're Arteta, you can go back and second guess yourself, like that weirdo triple substitution. But you say onwards and upwards.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of positives. Still, it's a defeat. It's never nice, of course. But I think they showed a bit of naivety, which they should learn a lot from. And I really hope they do, from Arteta to the players. Learn a lot from what happened at 1-1. You come back into the game, and then we were naive, I think, to try to go so quickly to get the second one. And you know, there's a lot of body forwards and then you have the high line. But if your counter press is not as efficient as it was before, if not very aggressive enough, then you end up your high line being completely exposed. And then that's the ball from Eriksen to Bruno to Rashford. And then the one from Dalot to Eriksen to Rashford again. And that's the goals you should not be considered when you go away to Old Trafford and you just come back to 1-1. However, credit to United because they were ruthless in the way they took those opportunities really well.
That 2-1, Eriksen, Bruno to Rashford, it's just all vertical. I thought that was pretty incredible. I mean, that is the manual of counterattacking football.
And true, but Odegaard is a second late on Eriksen because that counter press is not efficient enough. Maybe because he's tired, maybe because he doesn't expect Eriksen to play one touch like that. But it's helped by the fact that Arsenal's counter press and high line is helping United in that sense.
All right. We saw a counterattacking United in this game for all three wins, I think. They didn't have the bulk of the possession and were basically counterattacking, which is not the Ten Hag thing. We'll get into that a little bit later.
Yeah,
but Do Arsenal fans have a point to be angry about the disallowed Martinelli goal? Because that goal goes in, they take the lead, then at that point, United can't play counter-attacking football.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think it's a foul. I think it's a soft foul. But I can see why he gives
Odegaard it. Odegaard and Christian Eriksen.
Yeah.
So you would have disallowed the goal.
I think that was the right decision in the end. So Paul Tierney is really close to it. So he sees it like, I see you here. Yeah. Let it go, because clearly for him, there's not enough contact to give the foul. Then it's a goal. And then it takes 4 minutes to watch it on super slow motion to see. And that's where I've got a bit of an issue with. But I think it's a foul. Even if it's soft, it's a foul. And I think he was right in a way to disallow the goal. Right.
I don't even think it was a soft foul. I thought it was a foul. I don't understand why it took 4 minutes to go and decide.
Because clearly
that.
He wasn't sure. Otherwise, you say, I made a mistake.
This is what gets me about here. But I don't think Paul Tierney so far hasn't shown me that he's a great referee, even though he's been moved up very quickly because of everybody retiring. But to me, you have your hands, you have both hands on him, and you go in from behind. You know, people say, oh, it's a physical game. No, it's never been a physical game, even, you know, back in the day of somebody coming in from behind like that. Shoulder to shoulder, yes. This is different. Not only does he barge him, he also makes contact with his foot. That's a foul every day of the week. If you want to then debate that he should have called it straight away and there was too much time between that and the goal, but there wasn't that much time between them and the goal. My only issue here is that it took Tierney 4 minutes. I don't know what the heck he was looking at to go and make that decision. That's just how I saw it. What did you make of Anthony's debut?
I mean, the goal is a dream debut. I thought,
what about when he's got the two guys around him early on? Little back,
but you know that's what he does. I thought Ramsdale sort of helped him a little bit on the goal because you could see the angle and he's going to play there. He hadn't played for 3 weeks, hardly trained with United and not much with Ajax leading to the move. So he looked a bit short of match fitness, you could tell, and maybe would not go 1v1 as much because of that short of match fitness and short of fitness full stop. That's why you also played just an hour. But I think you played him to get that goal. The defending is atrocious from Arsenal on that goal. I mean, there's four of them around Rashford. No. It should not happen. But well done to Anthony for taking it. And that would bring him a lot of confidence.
Although I think the mistake with the defending on the goal was made before, because Zinchenko has no choice Gabriel, but to come in.
Yeah, but yeah. Gabriel comes out like, you know. Yeah.
I thought that was a huge hole from Ten Hag. I'll say this about Ten Hag. I don't know how good or bad he can be, but he's brave. Mm. And it's not just Cristiano Ronaldo now, obviously, 4 games on the bench. I think it's the longest stretch of his career. But like you said, Anthony's had, what, 2 training sessions with the team to go and just chuck him in there, knowing he's a bit of a hothead, a bit of a showboat. It can go really badly wrong for him.
Yeah.
But he trusts him. He trusts himself. He's brave. And I think it's good. I think it's a little bit of that swagger at United, that kind of bravery that Ten Hag has brought. Erik Ten Hag's been brought in, presumably, to play the football he played at Ajax, right? Which is heavy on possession, heavy on the pressing, and so on. They might have tried to do that in the first 2 games.
They did,
lost. Last 3 games, the ones they've actually won, it's been a completely different type of football.
Yeah.
It has. And I know I'm not saying this as in like, ooh, they've been negative. Although, you know, late in the game, we saw Harry Maguire make an appearance. It's more the idea that I think he's looked at this and says, like, I need points. I want to play to these strengths right now. So I know that I can go with a deep vertical ball because Eriksen and Bruno can both pass a little bit. I know I've got these fast forwards who can get behind the opposing defenses. That's fine for a while. But is there an alternate scenario where the Martinelli goal stands, and then what happens?
Yeah, because they took the lead against Liverpool. They took the lead, obviously, at Leicester, which was a very average performance from United, but they took the lead with verticality again. And then defended really well. And Southampton, they took the lead as well and then kept that lead. And there was not much more after taking the lead anyway. So
this is not how he wants to play.
No. But maybe he was a bit naive then at the start of the season for thinking, okay, Brighton at home, let's build up from the back. Let's not play long. Let's try all that movement, all the things that we worked on in preseason that we saw in friendlies worked really well at times and looked quite promising at times. And he thought, okay, let's do the same. And against Brentford, and then they were caught. Even someone like Eriksen was not comfortable doing it at Brentford and, you know, was terrible in that first half. And then he thought, okay, this is too early then maybe to do that style. We can work on it, although with games every 3 days and then the World Cup, I don't know where he's going to work on it, but it doesn't matter. Let's go different. Let's go more direct, like we saw against Liverpool, like we saw in a way against Arsenal, 40% of the ball at Old Trafford. And yet those counter attacks were really good. But this is where I think he deserves a lot of credit for, like, okay, let's, maybe others would have, you know, maybe dogmatic coach, like he is really, let's be honest here, would have gone like, no, this is my way and we're going to keep at it and we might lose another game or two, but we're going to improve. And, or more pragmatism, which I didn't think that was him really, of like, okay, let's change it to get some points now and then see where we are.
He has surprised us. And then, and maybe we underestimated that side of it. Again, I think this is all just temporary stuff. I don't think you can play this way. I don't think you can get results consistently this way. Certainly not with this group of players. But it's worked in these ones. He did what he had to do. I think it was he made the right calls on the matchups. I think we have to give him credit for that.
Yeah.
And one other aspect too, which I think goes unremarked a little bit, is Diogo Dalot, you know, obviously came over with Jose Mourinho, kind of a peripheral figure, went on loan. You know, nobody's like, whoa, it's Diogo Dalot, right? You can't even get in the head of Aaron Wan-Bissaka.
Hmm.
But now in the system, he fits. He's a player. McTominay, I know there's a portion of United fans who will always love McTominay because, oh, he's homegrown, blah, 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 British steel, yada, yada, yada. And there's others who just see a guy who, you know, runs around kicking people.
Yeah, like me.
You know, like you. There you go. But he's playing. Casemiro, not starting. 3 straight games.
Yeah.
Out of the lineup.
Yeah.
And Rashford, another one, right? Last season, Rashford on the bench, lost his way. Really, hasn't really performed in a couple years, you know, in a contract year. I'm not saying Rashford was perfect in this game, but he made the right runs at the right time. Maybe a bit lucky with one of the finishes that was deflected. But, you know, obviously had the pass for Anthony's goal. Yeah. This is a big performance from Rashford.
It is.
Do we give credit for Ten Hag there a little bit on the psychology of guys going again?
Yeah, must have. Although, you know, I think if Martial had been fit, which he wasn't, so this is not really a debate. But I think But Martial would have started up front and Rashford are wide on the right probably and Sancho on the left, which I still don't know what's...
And the 100 million euro man out?
No, that was before Anthony. Start the season. And I don't know what would have happened. And I don't even know what's Marcus's best position, if he prefers playing centrally on his own like this or wide. I don't know. But I liked him a lot in that game, because if you can play on the counter like that, he's so good. And he needs to improve in the linker play and be more available to receive the ball and have the big center backs behind him and hold it up. But I think he can do it. I just don't know if Ten Hag at the start of the season thought, okay, Rashford will be my go-out guy to play in that position and will be so successful. But now, they're playing well. It would be a different, like you said, the next game would be very different unless, again, they score early and have that lead and then can play on the counter, which is not going to happen every week.
Well, and I think you have another issue too, obviously, in terms of, for lack of a better word, passing midfielders. You've got Eriksen, you've got Bruno Fernandes. And then I believe that's it. I mean, you don't put Fred in the same class as those two. So you will necessarily have to come up
with... Eriksen started every game, played every game. I think at his age, there might be a point where he needs a bit of a rest too.
Think so. He's really run himself into the ground. Talking about Arsenal, I thought Arteta got a lot of things right. I love the way they came out at the start of the second half, all guns blazing. Mm-hmm. I think really that's where, you know, they got the equalizer, but I thought that's where they could have added to it.
Yeah, definitely.
I didn't understand the triple substitution with 15 minutes to go. Did you?
I guess you change something and you...
Or take off your good players for Eddie Nketiah and like...
Your... I don't know. I was a bit surprised, but I guess he wanted to try something different. I don't know. It was, it's one of those, you know, I love my substitutions and then when it doesn't work out, it's a bit like... Maybe not the most inspired on that one.
It also felt to me like at that stage, you've got so many attacking players on the pitch. You know what he's going to do. He's going to, you know, put on Maguire and they're just going to sit further back.
Yeah.
And then it's just more congestion. And unless Odegaard had a knock, look, Odegaard
did. He was doubtful before the game. And I think he was doubtful before the game for a knock that he picked up. And I think when you see the second goal and Odegaard being a little bit late on Eriksen at the start of the counter press, which then everything is delayed in a way, because then Bruno has an extra second and then Rashford and the et cetera, et cetera. Maybe he thought, okay, I need someone. But Fabio Vieira, who'd never played, to throw him in a game like this. And then I don't want to blame him for the third goal, but he's kind of marking Eriksen and then kind of stops. But I thought it was really brave, talking about bravery for Antony, for Arteta to put Vieira in for a game like that for the last 15 minutes, is considering he'd never played at all in the Premier League before.
Well, neither had Antony. The difference is Antony scored 100 million, it cost 100 million, and he'd had two training sessions, and Fabio Vieira joined the club like a month ago. So I know he's been injured, but...
No, but like, I don't know if it's the best of ideas to put Vieira for the last 15 minutes in a game like this when he hasn't played a second before. And you 2-1 down.
Yeah, in Arteta's defense too, we should also point out, and contracts are obliged to do this, is Thomas Partey wasn't there. I do think a little bit, my thoughts
on Zinchenko was injured as well before the game, so...
That thing that they do with Zinchenko coming inside and Xhaka shading left to cover that space, that works really well. That is one of the innovations.
I love that too, yeah.
When Zinchenko's there, I kind of like... A word on Gabriel Jesus, because I watched all the late night shows. I was up very late last night, and the number of people who are pointing out that, you know, situations where Arsenal were in transition and somebody's there for a cross, but look, Gabriel Jesus isn't in the box. It kind of started really annoying me. And as you know, I was the first to say, look, this guy's not really a genuine center forward. I trust Pep's judgment, blah, 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 right? He's not a genuine center forward. But it doesn't mean that the only way to play center forward is sitting in the 6-yard box the entire game, waiting for crosses to come in, especially when you're a little guy like Gabriel Jesus.
Yeah.
I actually thought he had a very good game.
Me too.
And I don't think, I don't understand this criticism. If you want to, do you have to attack differently, especially if he's the one going out on the wing, getting the ball? Of course. And you have to have runners or whatever.
Yeah.
But to all of a sudden discover this issue that Gabriel Jesus is not a traditional center forward, to me, is silly.
Yeah, it is a bit. And I thought he gave a really tough time to Lisandro Martinez because he chases everything, because he uses his body so well. This is where he's really good at. And I think that criticism is really unfair on him. His run for the Saka goal is magnificent to identify the space and going for it. I mean, the ball from Odegaard, when he shifts the ball from his inside left to the inside right, is great as well. And then, yeah, they get a bit lucky, but still, all that move was fantastic. Yeah. And I think he brings so much that you could forgive him to not always be in the 6-yard box when there's a cross.
Just to be clear,
that's not his game.
I'm not backtracking on this. My sense that I'm not sure this is a signing I would have made given how much it costs, given the wages and whatever. Because I think Arsenal, with the players around him, we're better off with a traditional center forward. Mm-hmm. All of that remains. But I just thought in this game, once you have him, you have to play to his strengths. And that is movement. And I thought he did that. I thought he did that really, really well.
Yeah, I agree.
This isn't going to have any... I mean, again, looking at their fixtures, it's all pretty downhill until the North London Derby in early October.
Yeah.
Arsenal are going to recover, yeah?
Yeah, I think so, because there's so much positive to take. And again, for me, this is part of... It's a learning curve. This is a young... It's a young team for Saliba to go there. Even Gabriel, they made mistakes. They've been a bit naive in midfield as well. They should learn from it. And if they do, they come back stronger.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, enough United. How about some quick hits instead? Yes. And by the way, notice we didn't even dwell on Cristiano Ronaldo in the previous segment.
No, exactly.
There you go.
Let's go, guys.
Barcelona piled the misery on Sevilla, winning 3-0 away. Jules, after a rocky start, they're clicking nicely.
Yeah, you're right. Rocky start the first 15 minutes maybe, and Sevilla had a big chance then. But after that, it was all Barcelona being away, by the way, at Sevilla, and playing some really good football, could have scored easily more goals. I think the expected goals in the end is like 4.5 or something crazy. So well done to them, to Xavi. There will be bigger tests ahead because Sevilla are dreadful right now, but it was a really good win for them.
I was really impressed in those first 15, 20 minutes. Sevilla back to the wall, you know, the fans unhappy, whatever. Sevilla went at them like, you know, hammer and tongs. And I think we're so used to Barcelona being open that they would have really suffered there. But instead, they were patient,
they were,
weathered that storm and took it to them. Well done.
That's true. And great Koundé as well, by the way, in that game. And sticking with Barca, Gab, Xavi got his deadline there. Reinforcement, Marcos Alonso and Héctor Bellerín all arrived. You happy with that?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a huge Bellerín guy. I mean, I really like him as a person, as a footballer.
Good at Betis.
Koundé can play right back. Marcos Alonso is just different. He gives you something completely different to what Balde does and Jordi Alba does. If you want to use him, set pieces, certain situations, why not?
Yeah.
If you're doing this, let's, you know, create a big Catalan boys club. Yeah. Probably not how I would have spent my money.
No.
Manchester City are held to a 1-1 draw at Aston Villa. Otherwise, they'd be top. Jules, regret for Pep?
I mean, regret because, I mean, the first half was dire. The second half was better. They had the chances to win it. He would be disappointed, by the way, they conceded that Bailey goal, really, on transition like that. And I think he's right to be disappointed. But they've also played a lot. It's not too bad in the table, for example. You're still unbeaten. And you can focus to the Champions League now. And Haaland scored again. All of that.
He's up to double figures.
Double figures already.
And it's early September.
Incredible. Both teams had chances to score, but it finishes 0-0. Gab, in the Merseyside derby between Everton and Liverpool. It's Jurgen Klopp's worst start since coming to Anfield those 7 years ago. But hey, they did sign Arthur on deadline day.
Yeah, so look, I think, you know, this game could have gone either way. Obviously, the Connor Cody decision late on, I think it was a correct decision, but so close. Who knows? Everton also hit the woodwork.
Yeah, Pickford and Alisson were great.
But right now, there's issues in the middle of the park. And that's why Archer is there. You know, Fabio Carvalho played a half and then came off. They just have so many injuries. They need bodies. And I said this. Look, worst case scenario, Archer goes, eats up some middle. He's another body. He's a live body in midfield.
Yeah.
Best case scenario, he turns into the player that we thought he was going to be. Mm. I don't think you hold your breath on that one. But yeah. It is something I think that should have been addressed, and they need to get Henderson and Thiago back. Bayern Munich dropped points again, held to 1-1 draw by Union Berlin, much to producer Freddie's delight. Jules, Nagelsmann says the energy levels aren't where they should be. Is he right?
I think he's right, but I mean, this is also the kind of football that he wants them to play, so their fitness will have to be at the top. They created less chances than they usually have done so far.
But still a ton more than Union Berlin.
Still a ton more, and they could have easily won that game again. I think they play another 9 times, and they will win the 9 times.
And the goalkeeper, Renault, not quite Jan Sommer, but not far off.
Not far off, you're right. But Upamecano with another mistake. I don't know if he's going to play in the Champions League against Inter, for example, but that almost cost them. And not taking the chances. I'm not too worried about the energy and the fitness, to be fair. I'm more worried about the lack of clinicality that maybe they should have, and they didn't have now in the Gladbach game and the Union game.
I'm worried by the lack of Muller starting on the bench.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. Real Madrid returned to the Bernabeu after 3.5 months and beat Betis, who have been perfect so far in the season. Gab, your thoughts about the game?
So I think a lot of things broke Real Madrid's game in this way. The fact that, obviously, you know, Betis without William Carvalho.
Yeah.
They lose Nabi Fekir, who's, you know, their one, I mean, not their only difference maker, but clearly most talented player after 10 minutes. That helps. But Real Madrid played better than Betis. Let's be very clear about this. What I liked here is all about the kids. Rodrigo, Vinicius, tremendous goal cutting across. Mm. So much maturity and intelligence. But this is not, athletic Vinicius. This was smart Vinicius with that goal. Tchouaméni was tremendous. Yeah. Camavinga did his job. They need to wean themselves off the old guys, including Benzema, who has been quiet.
Yeah.
By the way, Carlo came out and he says, oh, do we need a replacement for Benzema? We've got lots of replacements. Mariano, Hazard, Rodrigo, Asensio. If you look closely, his nose gets a little bit longer when he says that.
Yeah, of course.
Tottenham stay 1 point off the top of the league with a 2-1 victory over Fulham as Richarlison gets his first start. Jules, he looked good.
Yeah, he looked good. He looked, so far, he came on as a super sub almost and always was up front with Kane. This time he played behind Kane with Son. And I thought he was really lively on that sort of right-hand side, created chances on the Højbjerg goal, for example. It's him. I mean, he scored that goal and then threw the shirt off.
I think got booked and then it was disallowed.
Yeah, then he got disallowed. The yellow card is staying? Or? Oh,
of course.
So that's a bad one. But apart from that, it looked good. I don't know if... I think Kulusevski brings something... They're different players, but brings something that...
But he has those options. Likes.
But he's got those options, which he didn't have last season, for example. Chelsea also had a derby and they beat West Ham 2-1, but this wasn't pretty to start with. Not good at all from Chelsea. And there was a ton of controversy over Maxwell Cornes disallowed goal right at the end for West Ham.
Yeah, so I was at this game. It was nasty. It was edgy. I don't know that Chelsea managed a shot on target for like the first hour
they
of the game.
They were terrible.
I didn't feel that way.
Terrible.
It just didn't work. The setup, you started Pulisic up front with Sterling. Unsurprisingly, and you know, I told you so, things got better when Armando Broja, the big man, Ambrosia came on. And with Chilwell, why can't Chile play? Why you got to play this Cucurella? Enough of this.
Because you paid $60 million.
Come on, man. You paid a lot of money for Chile, too. But as for the incident, look, people have debated this endlessly, right? Yeah. It's Gerard Bowen jumping over Edouard Mendy, who parries the ball. There is contact there.
He leaves his leg a little bit.
Does he leave his leg?
He does.
The ball's already gone. Referee doesn't call in real time. For me, the issue is, is there enough there for you to say, oh, this was a foul? I don't know. I genuinely don't believe it should take, it should have gone there. The only explanation, I think, for referring this to VAR is if the referee says, oh, I didn't quite see what happened between Bowen and Mendy. If you're not sure, then I'm okay with it going to VAR. But this is why we need more transparency. We need to know these things.
Yeah, exactly.
If VAR just gets involved because they want to re-referee his decision, then that's wrong.
Yeah, yeah. That's why the Premier League are asking for answers, and I think they would have some sort of investigation in it.
Two big deadline day signings for Chelsea, Jules. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang and Denis Zakaria on loan. Your thoughts?
Yeah, Aubameyang, we knew that was going to happen. We said it, him and Tuchel being reunited. Although people forget that he ended up...
Pretty badly with him going on strike.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But let's see. I mean, he's got a broken jaw now after what happened in his half, so he's not going to be ready to play for a little bit. Zakaria, if he's the Zakaria who we know when he was really young, before even the last season at Gladbach, and then obviously the poor 6 months he had at Juventus, I'm happy with it. I think he can help them. Tuchel seems to think that he can play anywhere on the pitch, even as a goalkeeper. I'm not too convinced by that. But let's see. I think he deserves a chance and see how he goes.
I think it's pretty obvious that they feel that they need the defensive midfielder because N'Golo Kante is made of glass at this stage of his career and probably will be made of glass until after the World Cup. So it's a loan, whatever.
Yeah.
Aubameyang committing money to this, I think this is nonsense. I think it's nonsense. Waiting all summer. I don't see, you know, is he a forward? Is he a center forward? Does he fit? I don't see this at all.
No. I can see your point. Juventus get a point away at Fiorentina, who also missed a penalty with Luka Jovic. Gab, this was dreadful from Juve. They didn't have a shot on goal after the half hour.
I don't want to pick on Max Allegri, but he leaves me no choice.
Yeah.
Where to begin with this? They didn't have a shot on goal after the half hour mark, as you pointed out, right? Dusan Vlahovic starts on the bench, stays on the bench. But for me, Fiorentina's wingers, who you know aren't Cafu and Roberto Carlos, they are Dodò and Cristiano Biraghi, their average position was further up the pitch than Juve's wingers, Di Maria and Kostic. Di Maria substituted at halftime for who? For an attacking player so we can go and win this game?
Yeah.
No, for Mattia De Sciglio so we can preserve the 1-1 draw. Two other Allegri things I really didn't like, sending the wrong message. Mm. Late in the game, it's 1-1. And Allegri's kind of putting his arms, let's slow it down, guys. You know, let's preserve this result. It's 1-1 against Fiorentina. Are you kidding me?
I know.
I mean, you're Juve. You can do this when you're winning. And you can win ugly.
Which is what he does anyway, yeah?
But yeah. And then the other thing. Champions League this week, right?
Yeah.
They're playing Paris Saint-Germain, right? So they ask him like, oh, did you rest Vlahovic with a view towards Paris Saint-Germain? He says, oh, no, come on, let's be real. That's not the important game for us. The important game for us is going to be against Benfica. And I'm like, again, yes, Paris Saint-Germain are a better team than Juventus right now. But do you have to be so freaking defeatist to make it seem like you're managing a third of a club and you're so negative? I mean, how do the players feel when they say that? Yeah. You know, players like Bonucci, like Di Maria, players who want everything in sight, like Vlahovic, like, why am I here?
I know.
I should have gone to West Ham. I did not like this.
I know.
Smooth sailing for Paris Saint-Germain away to Nantes, Jules. And Neymar gets the day off, or at least the first hour off.
Yeah, he came on then for Kylian Mbappe when PSG were already in control, although they didn't play so well in the first half hour, really. But then after that, it got better. Nantes got a red card. The best moment was maybe the little sign in the stand of that little boy asking Kylian Mbappe for his shirt. So the sign said, can I have your shirt, Kylian, please? Or I'll cast a spell on you.
It was Paul Pogba's nephew, right?
Hashtag witchcraft. Napoli are joined up with Milan as they win away to Lazio 2-1. And Kvaratskhelia put on another show. What a goal that was as well. But Gab, Mauricio Sarri is grumpy and he could be in trouble as well.
Yeah, I wanted to go and, engage in more Kvaramania and talk about Victor Osimhen and how good he was and going away. But instead, Mauricio Sarri is forcing me to talk about him. I really like what he tries to do on a pitch in terms of football. But then sometimes, you get like those like 404 system error.
Yeah.
Like, and he starts spouting nonsense. So after the game, he was just unhappy because there was a Mario Rui on Zaccagni's elbow. Maybe he was right, maybe he was wrong. But he comes out and he starts saying, well, either the refs are incompetent or they're in bad faith. And then he says, somebody came up to me in the players' tunnel and said to me, we're going to make Lazio pay in this game. You watch, right? And he's talking about the referees. And I'm like, first of all, names.
Mad.
Who was it? Who's in the players' tunnel? There's cameras, right?
Yeah.
So some shadowy figure. Honestly, Mauricio, is it somebody that only you could see?
In his head. That was all in his head.
There's going to be an investigation. You cannot say stuff like this unless you're prepared to face the consequences. And by the way, this isn't the reason you lost.
Yeah, that's very true.
Joint leaders in the Bundesliga, two jewels, Borussia Dortmund, who won on Friday night, and Freiburg, the Christian Streich empire. I think it might be the first time ever. They notched a huge away win at Bayer Leverkusen, sadly, and our friend Rico Suave.
So not so suave for Rico anymore. And then we've been saying all through the season so far, they concede too many goals by Leverkusen and Freiburg, and the Christian Streich miracle continues after the season they had last year, the new stadium. Now this is happening. I don't know how long it will last, but amazing for them. Well done. And Dortmund, Marco Reus with a nice goal, well taken, although I'm not really sure that the ball from Brandt was for him. But anyway, they scored it. Even if they look a little bit shaky still at the back, it's a good win, and early October will be the Clásica, and if they're still in that position, then it could be interesting.
It's funny, all those people who are against 50+1 and whatever, they point out, they look at, they're asking questions like, oh, is it good to have Freiburg top of the table, given it's a tiny club, and given it is possibly the most, I don't want to say the most, because Bruce or Freddy's going to jump to the glass.
What
about Union Berlin? What about St. Pauli? But Freiburg is one of the most sort of fan-oriented clubs, no outside investment, blah, blah, blah. We're here for the fans, not to win trophy. Mm. Obviously they want to win. But I think it's fantastic.
It's
I think it also shows you the difference in salaries is never the difference in ability. Never.
No.
That's just the reality of football.
That's very true. Ivan Toney gets a hat-trick as Brentford beat Leeds 5-2. But Gab, Jesse Marsh gets sent off. Not for the first time, he's lost his cool on the touchline.
Yeah, first of all, props to Ivan Toney. I think he's got a real shot of going to the World Cup.
He should have a real shot of going to the World Cup.
I think he's competing with Tammy Abraham now to be like the anti-Harry Kane, or the alternative Harry Kane. Jesse Marsh, okay, part of me wants to make fun of him because he went to Princeton. And then part of me slightly feels for him.
Yeah, I did.
You see what happens, right? There's the penalty incident. I don't know what he said to the referee. Robert Jones, I'm familiar with Mr. Jones' work. It sounds like a made-up name. Maybe it was actually Lee Mason dressed like Robert Jones,
but under a
fake name. The penalty was Aaron Hickey on Somerville. Whatever. He's point of VAR. Go to the VAR. Watch it again. unless he said something that he shouldn't have said, which we don't know.
Yeah.
I don't see that it's necessary to send him off. I really don't see. And again, and I wish I knew, what did he say? I wish the referees would come out and say,
yeah,
look, you know, he called me corrupt. He said whatever. If he's just sitting there, and I think he's smarter than that. And it's not the first time he's gotten wound up on the sideline.
First time, yeah.
If he just said, look at it again. Why don't you look at it again? Blah, blah, blah. VAR, do something. Because he's desperate. I can live with that. I want to know what he said.
Yeah. Me too. I agree with you.
How about some love for Olympique Marseille? They beat Auxerre in their joint top alongside PSG. Huh? How about some love for you, for Mr. Tudor?
Yeah, Tudor. And he rotated the team to rest some players like Alexis Sanchez, for example, who, by the way, would be suspended for the Spurs game in the Champions League on Wednesday because of the red card that he got with Inter. Last season.
Sorry, wait, so he's resting him when he knows he's suspended in the next game?
Well, I think because not so much for the next game, but because he's played a lot since arriving with not much training. But I mean, Alexis was on the bench. Other were rested, I think, before the game against Spurs. But it's good they don't concede. There was a lot of intensity, I thought, from Marseille. And it was easy when they scored early with Gerson, then they scored late with Alexis after he came on. But yeah, this is good. It's taking shape. I think that's what he wants. And a bit like what Ten Hag is doing at United, there's more of a team spirit. There's more cohesion in the team right now, whoever plays, which I think Tudor would be very happy with.
Have the fans come around? Because a lot of times as a fan, right, you're sitting there and you're saying, what you don't want to see is players who make a lot of money and who aren't playing with intensity or whatever. If you play for a Tudor team, we saw it at Verona.
Yeah.
You have to go and run your backside into the ground. Like there's no ifs, ands, or buts, right?
Yeah.
Are they appreciating that or do they like Tudor? Because
I think he's still a bit mixed. But yeah, I think he's still a bit mixed. Right. But I think they will come around. If things continue like this, they will come around. But the Champions League match is huge. It finishes 1-1 between Real Sociedad and Atletico Madrid. My boy Mohamed Ali Cho shows he belongs, Gab, doesn't he?
I remember when we spoke about him on the show, now he'd signed for Real Sociedad. Yeah. And I remember I asked you, like, is he part Asian? Cho? I don't know. Is that a Korean or Chinese name? And then he's got the Muhammad Ali part. Then you hear him talk and he sounds like, you know, he's very much a Londoner.
He grew up here.
He's eligible for what? France, England, I think Morocco and somewhere else.
Yeah.
I thought it was, the guy's electric. You'll need a team.
Yeah,
it was fantastic. So they got the equalizer when Umar Sadiq came, of course, signed to replace Alexander Isak.
Yeah, on deadline there.
That said, I thought Atletico played better. I thought they got the bulk of the chances. And, you know, we want to see Atletico play better, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what they did.
That was the best performance they had
This season. But speaking of Atleti, Antoine Griezmann came on in the last half hour for the fourth consecutive game. He hasn't started a game yet.
Nope.
He always comes in minute 60, 61, 62, 64. Some folks don't believe this is a coincidence, Jules.
No, because it's not. this is the reality, which I'll get to the reality after, but just to explain it again. He's on loan still from Barcelona for the second season in a row to Atleti. If he plays more than 50% of the matches this season, then Atletico will automatically have to trigger the option to buy him for 40 million euros. They don't want to spend 40 million euros on him. They said they don't have that money. So they will make sure that he plays less than 50% of the minutes so they don't have to pay the 40 million buyout clause, if you want. Now to my point that this is the reality. And I don't think... You might remember a case where we had like this. We had cases towards the end of the season of if a player played 17 or 18 or 19 matches, then you'll have to buy him. So he was froze out for those last few games. But I never saw a player where you had to control his minutes from the first day of the season until the last because you don't want to buy him at the end of the season. This is dreadful for Griezmann. It's dreadful for France and for Deschamps to have one of his key players and one of the best players in the world.
Well, he's going to be well-rested, so what are you complaining about? He's still training. He's still playing a little bit.
He might be rested, but he'd be short of match fitness completely. He won't be able to play 90 minutes in a World Cup match if he only plays 25 minutes, you know, every 3 days for Atletico Madrid. This is ridiculous. And he might start some games, but which means that if he plays once 90 minutes, he won't be able to play at all the next game. Or again, only 15 minutes. I find this situation really, really laughable and ridiculous.
You know who probably doesn't like this either? Barcelona. Because then Griezmann goes back the other way. That 40 million never materializes. I don't know what lever is going to push at that point.
Oh, they agreed to sell him to Atletico, which I think that's what Atleti want, for 20 gonna want him, or 15.
Yeah, and then he has to, but he's got an enormous salary too. True. So then, you know, I don't know.
It's a situation that I've never seen before, unprecedented, that should never happen and be like this. I feel for him. I don't know who I'd blame for them, but.
And I believe this was before Laporta, right? The deal. Yeah. What a stupid deal to set it up this way. Yeah. I mean, not smart.
Make no sense. Roma had a chance to go top of Serie A on Sunday night away to Udinese. It didn't quite work out well for Jose Mourinho. And they got beaten 4-0. Many mistakes from Karsdrup to Rui Patricio.
This is terrible. Wow. Gareth Southgate was there to watch Tammy Abraham and Chris Smalling. Yeah. Not the great night for him there. Mourinho coming out afterwards, hey, on a chin, saying, you know, we were bad. We were really bad. Mm. Karsdrup set it up with, obviously, you know, you do the little sort of chest step back to the goalkeeper.
Yeah, but,
hey, how about you make sure nobody's there behind you when you do that?
Especially not Destiny.
Yeah, you know. Destiny Udogie was a serious player.
Yeah.
Udinese hitting them on the counter, and that midfield, Matic and Cristante, you know, Matic doesn't run much. And I'm sorry, Jose, signed Matic, you knew that, right? Cristante can run around a little bit, but not that much. Yeah, top of that, you know, you want to get back into the game, so then you take off Cristante and you move Pellegrini back, who's much more of a natural attacking player, you get overrun further. So I gave Mourinho credit for trying to go and win the game at 1-0, rather than settling for a drop, but still, not good. And they would have been tough.
Yeah.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When he's not pretending to buy Manchester United, Sir Jim Ratcliffe owns Nice. It's his day job, where he has assembled a posse of... I'm sorry?
You can't forget it, because sometimes I think that he forgets a little bit that he owns Nice.
But maybe to help him remember, he's assembled a whole posse of ex-Premier League players. After Nicolas Pepe, Aaron Ramsey, and Kasper Schmeichel, here's Ross Barkley, which is still not enough to beat Monaco.
It's not enough, and they were not very good. And I've said so many times on the show before, I don't believe what Favre is doing. I don't understand what they're doing. I can't read the project. I can't read anything. And now, Ross Barkley? I mean, come on, what's next? Jack Rodwell or like Emmanuel Adebayo? I mean, come on. What is going on here? Are you kidding me? And they introduced him like if he was Diego Maradona. Hello, this is Ross Barkley, a new signing. I was like... Come on, I don't understand. Well, I know Ian Moody is now in charge of the transfers, so he's naturally, obviously, looking at the English market because he's English and that's where his contacts are. But this is, I'm sorry, I love Aaron Ramsey and Nicolas Pepe and they're my boys, but I don't really understand where this makes sense. And then Ross Barkley, I think this is the final straw. Is that what you say in English?
Yeah.
Like the... I mean, really, Ross Barkley?
It's low risk, right? Chelsea paid him a whole bunch of money to rip up his contract and go away, right? So presumably, I don't know if Barkley's there on like a, you know, where he gets paid by appearance. Presumably, he's not making a lot of money.
He hasn't played football in like, 4 years or something crazy.
He played a tiny bit last season, maybe in the League Cup. And by the way, on the Monaco end, Wissam Ben Yedder, a bit of an incident there, no?
So strange. So he's on the bench. He's not happy, clearly. He has a bib on, but he's showing his hands. And then we think he's going to come on. But then he seems to be dropping his shirt or leaving it on the bench, then leaves the bench to go back to the dressing room and then comes back out after that to come back and sit on the bench. So we think like there must have been an argument. Apparently he had a stomach bug, had to go to the toilet. That's what Philippe Clément naturally said after the game on French television. Says no, he went to the loo.
When you're sliding into first and you think you're
I don't know, and then came back. So apparently no incident, although Disasi said that he was frustrated not to start the game, to be on the bench. So maybe he had a stomach bug and he wasn't happy. I don't know.
But maybe the unhappiness caused the stomach, but the stomach.
Maybe as well. No, good weekend for Premier League referees. Gab, we mentioned it a little bit already, but the PGMOL is investigating two decisions. The one, the Bowen Mendy incident in Chelsea West Ham that we mentioned already, and the other one that might be even worse, the one at Newcastle Crystal Palace.
The other one is worse. Basically, Newcastle score against Palace. Joe Willock runs into Vicente Guaita, but you can tell, you don't even need VAR to know that he runs into him because Tyreek Mitchell
pushes him,
behind
I mean,
him, pushes
so
him
like,
into his own goalkeeper. Referee allows it to stand. Oh, but here comes experienced referee who, for some reason, you know, when these guys retire, semi-retire, let's go and put them up in the VAR room. Lee Mason. By the way,
For some reason, he's short on money? More like what? Just...
I don't know, but he wasn't a good referee when he was officiating, and he's a worse VAR.
But
and
why you, if you retire, you retire full stop. You can't just like do VAR because you don't know what you do on the Sunday afternoon.
I don't know. Maybe he wasn't good. He wasn't fit enough to run around, and maybe but this is just such a bad decision. It's such an obviously bad decision. You know what's most disappointing to me is that if you're Lee Mason, you might say, "Hey, guy, referee, or whoever it was in this game, I forget. Yeah. Take another look at it, right?" Okay, fine. You take another look at it. I expect the referee on the pitch to have the guts to say, "Yeah, look, I took another look at it. And I guess what? Nothing's changed. I can see what
like
I saw
Michael
before.
Oliver did.
I can see Tyreek Mitchell." Yeah, like Michael Oliver did. Yeah. You say, "Oh, he's an experienced referee." I'm sorry, you get to the Premier League. He's not an experienced referee. This guy's probably refereed 400 games or whatever at this point. You know, he's moved up there. And again, I'm sorry I'm blanking on this dude's name. I expect you to stand up and say, like, "I'm going to call it the way I call it."
Yeah.
And it's such an obvious decision. I don't know what the PGML is going to do this now. What if Newcastle get, like, you know, they get a little bit litigious late in the season, this cost them or whatever.
Yeah.
Big time. It's not a good... You guys, referees on the pitch. You're still referees. Take your lead from Michael Oliver. And people here start, "Oh, finally somebody's stuck to his guns." It happens in other countries. Yeah. It's been normal. You know where this culture came in? Remember when they first introduced VAR in this country? They
wanted to be different.
Going to be different. Like, we're not going to have on-field reviews. Yeah, okay. They moved away from that, but that culture is still there.
Yeah.
It was not a good day for Leipzig. They were stuffed 4-0 by Eintracht Frankfurt. Jules?
I mean, I've rarely seen a team being outsmarted tactically so much and having nothing to react like Tedesco and Leipzig in that game. I thought Frankfurt played so well to exploit, you know, the fragilities, I guess, defensively from Leipzig, playing between the lines, finding all that little space everywhere and then attacking that space. Frankfurt was so good. I don't think Frankfurt can play like that every single weekend. Again, because I think Leipzig played into their hands, but it was a fantastic win from them. Amazing, especially just before the Champions League. It's a big boost for confidence and everything.
They were in a mess at the back. Orban, I'm not sure if it was Willy Orban or if it was a Hungarian prime minister filling in for the game.
I don't know, given the level of play. Back to Newcastle, Gab, where Eddie Howe complained that nobody did his club any favours in the transfer window, asking for a lot of money. Welcome to the real world. Like, what did you expect?
I did not understand what he meant. And then so I watched it again and he says, like, "Oh, you know, nobody did us any favors. They inflate the prices when we negotiate with them." I mean, first of all, unless you've been living in a box, which I know Eddie Howe, I know he may look like it sometimes, but you know, I know Eddie Howe lives in the real world. He doesn't go and like shut himself into a closet, you know, when he's not working. Look at Newcastle. Oh, sorry, look at United. Look at how much money they have
every
to spend
English
for players.
Club. Sancho, Forest as well. Yeah. Everybody.
So people know you have a lot of money and they negotiate hard. You know what? That's just how it works. It was such an odd thing to say.
Very strange.
It's also odd. You know you're not going to get sympathy. Nobody's going to give you sympathy for this. What, are we going to have a go at Real Sociedad for charging you too much money for Isak? I mean, what? Like, I don't... It was such a strange thing to say. Speaking of strange, Mauricio Icardi posted pictures of himself in Miami. I'm sure you follow him on Instagram. We all do.
Yeah.
Not a great look when your team is playing in Nantes. I'm assuming Paris Saint-Germain don't care where he goes, but at some point they have to care, right?
Yeah, although the Turkish market, as you know, is still open and they believe, or they're optimistic in the sense that they found already an agreement with Galatasaray and Fenerbahce. Now I think it's down to
both teams.
For PSG point of view, yeah, then I think he's down tomorrow and Wanda to decide where they want to go, if that's what they want to do. Or he can continue being not a football player, but a stay-at-home dad, like I always say, and go every weekend on holidays because one weekend is at Ibiza because he's not in the matchday squads. And I guess doesn't think like, "Hey, maybe
I should go training.
Is he still
training with the team
fitness?"
And does he just go to...
He trains on his own with either the youngsters or a group that Cartier and the club that don't want there.
Like who? Who's there?
So Rafinha was there before he moved Saudi Arabia or Qatar, whatever. Herrera was there. We mentioned it before. You know, those players that didn't want. Yeah. And so, but they find an exit door for all of them. Mauro is still there and, you know, he thinks, hey, let's fly to Miami this weekend to go on a boat with all our friends. I mean, come on. This is ridiculous, man.
Why doesn't he go and give David Beckham a call? Maybe there's some room at Inter Miami, no?
What a disaster that's been. Gab, a big deal has been made about the record spending of Premier League clubs, of course, in this summer transfer window. We reached the £1.9 billion or €2.3 billion. But you've got column saying that number is irrelevant.
The number is so stupid. It's beyond irrelevant. And I don't understand.
Net spending that counts.
Net spend! Don't talk about spend, fella. Talk about net spend. You know, I don't understand. What is so difficult to understand about this? If I sell you my bicycle for £50 and you sell me your scooter for £50, oh, look, we both spent £50, but we haven't exchanged any money. This is so dumb.
Yeah.
And I am appalled how many of our colleagues in the media, and you know why this is. This is because somebody put out, I think it was Deloitte, put out a press release saying, like, oh, look, they beat their spending record from 2017 or whenever it was. And so obviously everybody's like, oh, let's not look at numbers. Let's just go with a stupid figure. You want the real figures? You want the figure that matters?
Yes.
Because the figures that matter underscore even more the financial dominance of the Premier League.
Yeah.
The net spend, I have these numbers in euros because the Premier League mostly buys players from abroad. And so most of those are in euros, right? Premier League's net spend, they spent €1,352 million euros, right? 1.352 billion.
Yeah.
Okay, that is how much they spent. Of the other supposed big five leagues, only two of them actually had a net spend. La Liga spending 52.4 million, which... That's million, yeah. And by the way, this is driven entirely by Laporta's levers, by the way.
Yeah.
And Serie A spending 3.9 million as a league. The Bundesliga and Ligue 1 both had positive net spend, which meant they took in more money than they spent. I mean, what we have right now is a situation where the Premier League is basically subsidizing the other leagues in Europe.
Yeah, it backwards them.
This is just the reality of the situation. It has implications. There's reasons for it. You can read my column to see what I think about it. But please, please, enough with the stupid gross spend.
Yeah.
Because it's so dumb.
Yeah.
Sorry, rant over. Massive blow for Wolves, who lose new signing Sasa Kalajic to an ACL injury. I feel really, really bad for him.
So, it's really unfortunate.
So they're giving a trial to Diego Costa, who turns 34 next month and hasn't actually played since 2021.
I mean, I'm surprised that Nice are not going for Diego Costa. But now that he's in Wolverhampton, I mean, come on. I want to see him in the Premier League. But you know why? Because
I want to see him in Nice. If you're Diego Costa, I'm sorry, with all due respect to Wolverhampton, would you rather live in Wolverhampton or would you rather live on the Côte d'Azur where you can hang out with Ross Barkley?
For sure. But I want to see him back in the Premier League because I think that a player like him, when you're 34 and you've lost, I mean, you've never been very good technically anyway, but you've lost that. I think you're going to be even nastier than before, even more aggressive, even more like, and I just want to see that. I want to see him going to like big teams and big stadiums and just going like in their face all the time and everything.
And you know what? He's somebody who I actually think for the limited things that he does at this stage of his career, it was never about athleticism with him, right?
Yeah.
He was always just like the strong guy who somehow, you know, he has kind of like that old man strength and like that sort of competitiveness pace. I remember people at Chelsea telling me that, like, you know, every time when he was there, right, when they do sprints, he'd normally, you know, he'd always finish with the goalkeepers. But then during games when they actually timed him, you know, he wasn't Mbappe, but he wasn't that slow either. He could get around. Yeah, yeah. It's just the kind of guy he is.
Exactly.
So I just hope Kalajic comes back and Jimenez stays fit.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see. Marcelo has a new club. He's joining Olympiakos in Greece. Gab, we know you're a big fan.
I'm a big fan of Marcelo, not Olympiakos, and nothing against Olympiakos, but I'm a huge fan of Marcelo. Unfortunately, he's not going to get a chance to win his 23rd Champions League this year, or however many he has, because Olympiakos are playing in the Europa League.
But he might win the league, the Greek league, which adds to another trophy. He's on like 29 or 30.
He might win the Europa League.
More.
Why not?
The Europa League.
I think it's good. If you're talking about having a guy who can give you a lot of edge, I honestly don't know. I will research, tell you if Olympiacos play a back three or a back four. I hope they don't play a back four.
I think they do play a back four.
Yeah, you might want to revise that a little bit, at least against certain opponents. But no, he's got so much quality, and he's a winner, and he's so much positivity. And that smile, that Marcelo smile with a bless him. Touching story from Exeter involving Jay Stansfield, of course, who's the Fulham forward. He joins them on loan, and he's going to wear his dad Adam's retired number 9 shirt.
Yeah, that's right. Adam, who passed away a few years ago from cancer when he was only 31, and they decided at the time to retire the shirt that no one would ever wear again. And when his son, Jay, arrived on loan from Fulham, it was just this incredible story. So moving. Yeah. And emotionally charged, really, that his son then can wear the shirt that his dad wore all those years ago. It's an amazing story, really amazing story. He finished 0-0 in the FA Cup first qualifying round between Blackfield and Langley and Shepton Mallet. Yeah, those clubs really exist. But yeah, that's not why we're talking about this game, right?
Yes, that's right. And by the way, people who are unfamiliar with the lower leagues, like Blackfield, you might wonder, wait, was it a 3-way game between Blackfield, Langley, and Shepton Mallet? No, Blackfield and Langley, that's actually the name of one club. Shepton Mallet's another club. This was odd. And remember, this is one of the great things of the FA Cup. This is the same competition where the finals at Wembley and you'll probably see Liverpool and Man City and Chelsea and clubs like that. But it starts at the very bottom. Yeah. And the goalkeeper for Blackfield and Langley, Connor Maseko, 15 minutes ago, he realizes, ooh, I got to pee. And because at this level, they don't have like sort of very sophisticated stadium, the ball goes out of play, goes into these bushes behind the goal. He goes behind the ball, goes behind the goal, and he decides to have a quick whiz. And so for that, referee sent him off because you can't leave the field of play for that long without permission.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, finish 0-0. There's going to be a replay.
Of course.
Right, Jules, that brings us to an end. Wow. But guess what? What time is it? It's
Champions!
Unbelievable. Coming up this week, so we got to come back on Thursday. Do this all over again. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.